Good in your Daisy Gang tee, Ian.
Oh, thanks.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, May 31st, the end of May 2022. Gray May. That's Ian Ferguson.
Going into the sixth fucking month of this year.
I'm gray-haired Pat Contry. On the show today, we're talking about a scandal in the big box PC game collecting community. We'll also be discussing Reggie speaking about the potential of NFTs and blockchain. Hurts my heart. A new Evercade console was announced.
Yeah.
And more stuff. Elon Musk versus hard drive as well. Yeah, good weekend, Ian. You watched some horror movies that we talked about a little bit on the exclusive Patreon podcast, patreon.com/CU podcast this week.
Watched a big ol' gripper movies.
We also talked about the new Winnie the Pooh horror movie coming out and the case for and against public domain.
And you watched some Stranger Things.
I watched some Stranger Things. I'm halfway through it right now. And so far I like it. I liked season three just because the mall setup was done damn well.
Right.
So I respected that. They kept about I read about the brothers that directed and writer, they thought about keeping it open as an attraction, and they decided against it, and they didn't. So I guess they shut down the facility. But I guess all that stuff is still up. I don't think they took that stuff down. So
right.
So it's out there somewhere where they found that. There's so many abandoned malls. So like they found one and just said, oh, we're going to do up this mall. So like we're going to do fake storefronts, and yeah, it's great.
I'm surprised they didn't keep it open as an attraction. That's a popular show.
The logistics probably would suck for that.
Yeah. Sure.
That's what's going on in my life, Ian.
Yeah.
Marble Madness 2.
Marble Madness 2.
Was finally playable.
Yep. You can play it on the Internet Archive.
This is one of, like, I guess, like, you want to say the grails of preservation, where, like, we knew.
One of them. Yeah, this game has been known forever and ever. Yeah. I mean, when I first got into, you know, learning about weirder and more esoteric, like, video game stuff in the mid to late 90s, Marble Madness 2 was already known.
Esoteric. I haven't said that in a bit. You just said it.
There it is. That's big news. I mean, I don't have a whole lot more to say about it. I don't think it was stated how it leaked, but from what I believe I read, they said that it was an older dump of it. Like, the dump, I think there's a date on it or something, but the dump is from a while back, and it's just managed to kind of find its way.
The main person said that could be a maybe misleading, because it could have been an older computer that was used to dump it times.
Gotcha.
So it could be, you know, something like that. So either way, this was not, they made prototype cabinets. They put them out in the wild to test it, and they never mass produced them. That's why. So these are only in collectors' hands. There's a picture here about two prototypes in the hands of a single collector. So they're just hoarding them. So this is good that this got out. We don't know how. We don't know if it was done in a sleazy, sketchy way, where they, like the one story we had where the person was
where
repairing
it was
the machine
while they repaired the machine.
And I applauded that.
I think it was Pyramids of, or no, I don't know what, I can't remember.
It was a few
what
years
game
ago.
It was.
We
talked
about.
No, I know. I just was trying to remember the game.
But it's out there, so that's good. There's a picture of it at California Extreme at this Ars Technica article of it being shown in 2007. So, like, we're talking about a game that people, it's not like this is a sequel. We've known about this game for forever.
Right.
And it's just that it's good that we can finally have it fully preserved here. And I love the original. We talked about video game years, and great music, great design. That mid 80s Atari arcade aesthetic, they were on fire, all those games. Tubin, we talk about all of them. Road Blasters, all those games with unique schemes in the mid 80s. Gauntlet. I mean, there's like a Murderer's Row of games, APB, Paperboy. God, I keep going on. What else going on here? Embracer Group is getting into the preservation, though they have been in secret without people knowing about it, and they announced this.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's a big undertaking. Basically, their goal is to have a physical copy of every game ever released. They've started, apparently they have, an underground lair in Sweden, where they have started collecting these.
Is that where they have all the seeds and stuff kept in case of a nuclear holocaust? Is that also in Sweden?
You maybe.
Know that, right?
Yeah.
All the seedlings and so we can always, you know,
rebuild. Yeah. Early access video shows the underground secret vault in Sweden where they keep all of the objects they've collected so far. This is a Rock, Paper, Shotgun article by Jay Costello. And they talked to Kelsey, actually, from National Video Game Museum, talking about how while this is, you know, a collection, an archive of stuff, what's more important is to, you know, be able to experience or relay what these games were like in their time and to be able to play them and stuff like
that. We were talking about, like, a museum is in a compilation of everything that exists, and a museum is showing you the experience of the things at the time and the culture. That's what a museum is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that's Kelsey's point, and I agree.
This is just a huge collection to me.
Right, exactly. That's what I think this is. It's a big collection, and if it's open and people can use it and they end up setting up systems and you can, that's great. But otherwise, it's a collection under the name of preservation.
Yes.
And that I'm not, like, the most interested in. But I think it's a pretty crazy undertaking, but Embracer Group would have the money to do it.
Yeah, they're going to buy one. I guess it's just not include computer games. It's just console, because the computer game's a whole other bag of shells versus that. And I guess it's going to be...
That's a weird thing for them to do, and that also, I think, solidifies in my mind that this is more of a collection than an archival project. You can't... If your goal is literally every game, you can't just discount computer games.
Because there's just as many, probably, if you go by the numbers. There's probably just as many.
Oh, sure. If not more. Because you got all the homebrew and stuff like that, and obviously that would be hard to track down. Homebrew. Right, all the commercial releases,
but you're talking like the first years of computers, and then I guess once you get to the 90s when it really blew up, though, more. But yeah, by the 90s, you're going to have more computer game releases, I think, than console. I think year by year, probably.
Yeah.
Talk about small and medium-sized companies putting out games as well, probably. Shareware sort of games, there's tons of those. So anyway, well, that's cool. That's cool to want to, you know, preserve things and look at nice things. You know, you can look at nice things
at
Nintendo.com. Yeah, mm-hmm. You absolutely can. You got nice NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks that you can look
that
at.
That was like, you were like, I'm going to throw it. Telegraph that. Shooter across the room.
Shooter's going to shoot. You got the enamel pins. We're down to, like, I think 7 left on this print run. You got the Pat Pixel hair pins. RBI baseball stickers. Buy the Costco toilet paper roll right here.
Mm-hmm.
All and more, not for resale, Blu-ray, all at UltimateNintendo.com. I'll be at... What's with these little jabs at me?
I didn't make a jab. I said .com.
Trying to mirror me? I'll be at Too Many Games in Oaks, PA, June 24th to 26th.
Oaks.
And then I'll probably hit a friendlies up. And then I will be on... Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/contracode. Thursday is game one of the NBA finals.
It sure is.
Dubs versus Celtics. Let's go. I'm picking Dubs in 7. It's going to be a tough series.
Oh, it is. It's going to be a tough one. I would probably root for the Celtics.
Root for my fist in a second.
Yeah.
You like the Celtics? Really?
I mean, if it's a California team versus an East Coast team, I'm going to take the East Coast team.
It's Northern Cal, though. It's not LA. It's not the Lakers.
I definitely can't do L.A., but I'm not particularly sold on any California teams, except for maybe the Padres.
Wow, Ian. That hurts.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it a billion times. I fully support your fandom.
Not the Angels?
No. I fully support your fandom, but I can't get into
not
that.
The Sacramento Kings?
Sac Kings might be the one the I could, Sac Kings. But I can't.
One of the worst run organizations in sports the past. You know,
I even said
years.
I can't. Like, you're close. But
Sac Kings. You had to shorten to make it sound cool.
Yeah.
No one thinks the Kings are cool, by the way.
No one does.
This is a quick story about an MMO that's not been around for even a year, getting canceled. A Marvel MMO was canceled. I didn't know existed.
Yeah, I didn't know it existed.
That's why
it
was canceled.
All right, well, that's the extent of that.
They announced it in a blog post by parent company Enad Global 7.
Love that company. Make some of my favorite games.
The game was, you know, like this corporate talk. The game was canceled after a reevaluation of the development, risk profile, size of investment, and the long-term product portfolio strategy. It ain't selling. No one's playing it. That's all you got to say.
That's it.
This was a super bad mistake. An MMO you have to do constantly, you know, upgrade and have new features come out for it and the servers, and it's a tough thing to keep going if no one's playing it. You know,
yeah,
it's never finished. An MMO was never finished. It's always ongoing, you know. Too expensive, and they needed money, and no one's playing it. So there you go. It was announced last November.
Last November?
Yes. So we're talking
It didn't even make it a year.
No. That's what I'm saying. Okay. No. Not a year from announcement. So that's all you got there. I don't know the name of the damn thing.
Well, if you played it, it's gone, and we're very sorry.
Yeah, exactly. A new Evercade.
Yes.
Was announced. Evercade's only been around for a couple years, and, you know.
This has been, this was announced, I think, this morning. We were just made aware of it this morning. Great. Thank you, computer. Thank you for closing that page I just opened. So it is a remodel of their handheld unit, and honestly, some people were asking us, hey, do you think this is too soon? Evercade's cartridges are cheap. They've got marketing and licensing they have to deal with. I don't think it's that weird for a company to iterate something every year, every other year. And I mean, they did the console last year. The main reason I want to give this one a break is it's taking care of the problems people have with it, namely the battery life is getting extended, and the screen on the original Evercade is not a particularly great screen. It's got a lot of like bad spots where, gotcha, you know, it doesn't light up. It doesn't look proper if you hold it at an off angle. So they're upgrading it with a 4.3 inch IPS screen, and it bumps the resolution from 480 272 to 800 480.
Which for a lot of these games you don't necessarily need, but it's nice to have, especially since it's going to have Wi-Fi. So I'm not sure if that means you'll have like a web browser on this. I have no idea what the Wi-Fi.
No, they say right now the Wi-Fi is simply going to be making updates easier.
Okay.
Which is fine. They said they're not, at least as of right now, they're not going to be selling games on any sort of web store. One neat thing that this does add is it adds the ability to hold it in Tate mode. So if they get like horizontal shooters or they're not going to get Nintendo products, but something that uses a vertical monitor like Centipede or
Donkey Kong. They put, basically, when you're looking at it sideways, normally there's an A and B buttons vertical. So when you turn it, you'll hold it up by the bottom with the cross pad and the aim. It's a great idea. It's actually brilliant.
It's a great idea. I realize fitting one more button in there would have been tough, but a lot of shooters, depending on how far they go,
they do three.
A lot of shooters will have three buttons.
There's a little trigger right by there. You can do it. You can kind of pull it off there. Yeah?
You can, but it's hard. I've tried to play like PSP games like that.
There's what, four triggers on this?
Yeah, four triggers, four face buttons, two duplicate A and B buttons, start, select, and home.
No, I think it's going to cost
$150.
This is what I'm going to say. Yeah, it's only been 2 years. I will say this. I would cut them from Slack just because. No one knows. Like, we're talking, this is not a huge company that originally came up with this.
I don't think anyone expected them to get as popular as they did.
The amount of R&D and money to, like, put out something that is truly unique. This isn't an AliExpress just ROM holder.
Right.
We're at least building, like, something that can play these games. And we're building our own, you know, interface, our own menu. Like, this isn't just, like I said,
right. They probably made what they could with the money they had.
They had to walk before they could run.
Yes.
Obviously, this would have been nice to have been the first version, but I can't tell you the riskiness. Like, this, the same way when limited run starts out, people are like, why are you doing small runs? Because they can't afford to do, like, say, oh, we're going to print 15,000 something, and if they don't sell, they're out of business. Yeah. That's the bottom line. That's how businesses works. You have to do these calculated smaller risks.
Well, I remember in the early days, someone said something to me basically along the lines of, with limited run, we're one bad decision on a game away from, you know, like,
yes.
I mean, limited run's definitely grown way bigger.
Oh no, they're a huge
massive
company now. Yes.
They're massive, but back they weren't then,
the first year.
Yeah, people were upset, but it's like, do you want a shot at a physical game, or do you just want no physical games at all? This is what we have to do.
Yeah, they can print 5,000 of a game for the Vita back then and sell 500 of them. They got to pay a license fee for every single one on top of the production. It's like, then they're done. That's it. So that's my point. The point is that you have to start smaller. Maybe a competitive, a competing company doing their own console could have thought the same way. Let's start small, and then we'll see what we get in terms of the interest. That's usually the smart way to go there. Unless if you're doing books like me and you're just an idiot. What else we got going on, Ian?
Well, this one's sad, and this is why I always say don't have corporate heroes. Reggie Fils-Aimé has commented on NFTs and the blockchain. He's commented on it slightly before. He says that he believes these technologies could have substance and value. And while I feel like there's always a potential that something could have substance and value, the way he talks about it does not convince me of any substance or value. In fact, Reggie, unfortunately, parrots most of the points that have already been proven to not mean anything. So he talks about a game like Pokemon, that uses NFTs, not an original concept, also not necessary, also something that's already kind of being done with that game Axie Infinity, which suffered like a multi-million dollar heist like a month ago. We talked about it briefly. You might not remember it because so much shit happens with NFTs, you can't keep track
of it. There's so many scams and weird shit that happen every day.
So then he talks about Animal Crossing, and this is like truly dark and kind of gross to me. Taking a game like Animal Crossing, which is kind of like a stress release for a lot of people, you know, a happy, pretty chill game, people can get really into it, but most of the reasons why people like Animal Crossing is it's just kind of a relaxing escape from the world. And he talks about building up everything in Animal Crossing, and then wouldn't it be great to be able to monetize that when you're done playing?
Here's his quote, that this, I knew you're gonna key on this, this is why I key on this, is awful.
Yes.
For him to say this. There are some games I've invested 300 hours in a game, and when I'm ready to move on to something else, would it be great to monetize what I've built?
No.
And he uses Animal Crossing as an example. This is really bad. This is a guy that, you know, was ahead of, you know, Pizza Hut or whatever. They're doing the Bigfoot Pizza, or was it Domino's?
Yeah, Bigfoot
Pizza Hut. So that's the same guy that comes to Nintendo. He's going to sell you shitty quality pizza, but with a great marketing premise and name in order to, like, oh, it's a Bigfoot pizza.
Right.
So, like, that's the same guy that came to Nintendo. Yes, we all love Reggie. We love him on stage. He seems like a cool dude overall. He's laid back.
He's funny, and I would probably have some good conversations with him, but this is
still...
He's a corporate businessman.
He's a president CEO mindset still, thinking, how could we make more money out of this?
So the Animal Crossing thing is particularly upsetting to me, because, and this is what I always say with NFT games, once you introduce the ability to make money in a game, people are no longer going to play that game the way it's meant.
Pervert the entire meaning of the game.
The entire game changes. Yes. All of a sudden, now Animal Crossing is literally just a second job. And it's just more work. And it's people grinding.
And they're playing differently because of that.
Because at the end of the day, if money's involved, you're going to find, and we've said it a billion times, you're going to find ways to break the game. You're going to find ways to min-max it. And suddenly, you're not playing a game. You're working a job.
Everyone's going to try to find, I'm guessing there's, I've not played it. There's rare items that probably people will be hunting after. They're going to try to develop the best spot of land on the island to get paid. And it's like, now it's just fucking gross. It's no longer a little vacation getaway. Now it's just like a commercial, like real estate fucking game.
And somewhere in here, he touches on it, or at least his ideas are in line with it. People always talk about being able to monetize like items and stuff you get in games. All you need to do, it's amazing how quickly people forget, is look at Diablo 3. It launched with a real money auction house, and they shut that shit down because it ruined the game immediately.
And they recognized it. At least they recognized it.
Yeah.
They're like, this is bad. And then he said, I understand the divisiveness. I really do. And certainly the environmental elements, that is something that has to be solved. Well, it ain't going to be solved. I mean, people say about, you know, different types of blockchain. It's not getting solved right now.
Ethereum's been months away from going from proof of stake to proof of work, or whatever the alternate one is. Yeah. And they just never do. They've been saying it for years.
And not all blockchain is so environmentally disruptive. The fact is, though, most of it is that we know about.
Well, and the other problem is a lot of the blockchains that are saying that they're not environmentally destructive is because they try to be carbon neutral. And we've already talked about
plant a sapling.
Yeah, plant a bunch of trees someplace.
Doesn't help us now.
No,
we're talking about potential things.
Trees take 10 years to get to, like, from what I was reading, it's like 10 years to get to the point where they're actually producing a meaningful amount of oxygen.
Gotcha. So it's like in the meantime, you're just wrecking your any positive energy developments from renewables are being wiped the hell out, which is what's been happening with a lot of this stuff. We're not talking about all the eco waste. We don't talk about that. We're not talking about the tons of like CPUs, GPUs. There's literally pictures of warehouses of stacks of e-waste from burned out processors and graphics cards from mining crypto and doing blockchain stuff. Like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
How much of this exists?
So I just recommend people really lay off the weird cutesy affection for like certain people in these video game companies, because you end up with this, and then it's just like you can think these people are interesting or neat, but like
they're not gods.
They're not fucking gods.
Don't put people on pedestals like Elon Musk.
Elon Musk.
Let's relax a bit on the worshiping of people. It's not like, and people can do good things. Elon Musk, you know, gave electric cars a big shot in the arm that was needed. Absolutely, that was needed.
And his electric car will thankfully be useless, or a thing of the past once other companies get their electric cars on the road.
He gave it the initial push that the industry needed. Sure. It was a disruptor. And now you're having other better real car companies fill in the gaps and make cars that are cheaper and won't trap you while the car burns you alive, potentially.
The problem is like he did this one thing with the help of many, many other people and got high on his own fucking farts.
Yes.
So Hard Drive, a account that I love to follow on Twitter. They're very funny.
They're satirical.
Satirical. It's like the Onion of video games kind of thing. So Elon Musk deleted the tweet already, but the understanding is he retweeted something that Hard Drive tweeted,
an article about from Hard Drive.
An article
about how the VLC player figured out decrypting the Zodiac Killer.
Oh, okay.
So it's tongue in cheek about VLC player. You download, there's all these plugins and codecs.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, so I see it. But he cut them out of the retweet.
He tweeted just the picture headline without the article, without their name on it.
Correct.
And because he likes posting memes because he's a 50-year-old man-child. And that's all he does. That's how he does that to get attention for his Tesla stock and for his stuff.
So Hard Drive's response was a wonderful, hey, I'll give you a horse if you stop cropping your name off of our article.
You may ask, why would they say give us a horse? Because it's like their children? No, because it's come out in the past few weeks that Elon allegedly offered a horse
for a hand job,
for basically an erotic massage to one of the airline attendants on his private plane, and they settled out of court for $250,000 with that attendant after she refused, and she claims that after that she couldn't get work anymore for that. So that's why that's a brilliant response. And then he responded, well, if you make something that looks like a meme and someone, not me, crops up your name, so it goes. And also, this is only a 6 out of 10 meme, so maybe step down from that high horse. Speaking of horse, this person is unaware and just oblivious and is an unfunny fucking dork. Elon Musk, I'll just say that.
He's unfunny, and he, like, his whole thing is he's 50 and he wants to be cool with the worst shitheads on the internet.
He wants to be hip with the kids.
He wants to
How you doing, fellow kids? That's Elon Musk.
He wants 4chan to like worship him. He wishes he's awful. So they replied with another one. Hard Drive that says, okay, well, let me know what you think about this one. And it's Elon Musk admits he wants to travel to Mars because no one hates him there.
Yes.
and Musk replied, less funny than SNL on a bad day. The lack of awareness here. The lack of awareness. Just teeing it up.
This could make a drunk person sober, which is such a fucking boomer response.
Yep.
And he says, try harder. And then Hard Drive is like salivating, the person writing the tweets. Just because I would have been. And they tweeted, well, you're the expert on SNL's bad days, showing sad Wario, Elon Musk as Wario on SNL when he hosted it last year.
Yeah. So then when you click on it, I think it's this one. Elon Musk then, realizing his defeat, decides to just use keywords, code words that, you know, make him sound smart, and says, the reason you're not funny is because of wokeism.
Yes, that's what it is.
And while I've always found hard drives politics to be agreeable with mine, I don't think they're out of their way to be woke.
My favorite response was this top one. If Elon Musk hates socialism so much, why is he always getting publicly owned?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So it just goes back to the hero worship. And obviously there's a bunch of Elon Musk fanboys out there that are in love with him, and you can't say anything bad about their god. And,
I'm sure our comment section is
and hard drive
is
hysterical. So hard drive got a big boost from this, obviously. And they
The other thing. Like the hard drive's responses, I don't spend a whole lot of time with the internet popularity contest thing, but the word is ratio. They destroyed him in the likes game.
But then they did a apology on their website for this, and it's I don't know if you read that.
No, I did not.
It's funny.
Okay,
it's brilliant, and it's funny, and it talks about the woke stuff and. One of the lines from it real quick, it's like, we know how harsh a 6 out of 10 meme is in video games. That means it's practically zero. You know, stuff like that. It was, I don't know who wrote that article, but like, I'd love to be able to, you know, try to submit an article sometime, because that's like my cup of tea, that sort of writing. So that's
good stuff.
That's good shit. That's good shit.
It is.
Speaking of good shit and wrestling, Ian.
Yeah.
So it was alerted on Friday, SmackDown. We have our first... poster board of the Intelligent Miko appearing at a wrestling event.
Someone tagged us like right as it happened, and we had a picture within like half an hour, and it just says it's right by the entrance. It's clear as day. It says Intellivision Miko scammed me with a little frowny face.
With a little frowny face. And if you know about wrestling events the past few years, there's lots of like nerdy video game signs that like Final Fantasy IX is underrated, yes. Stuff like that. You see lots of those like RPG yep. stuff, and it's like, I guess there's a crossover there in some of the audience, and it's just fun yeah. stuff.
And it's just nerdery.
It's nerdery. That's a good word. It's just trivial. Plus, you know, like the New Day have been kind of nerdy and geeky and a lot of their stuff the past several years. So there's been like this crossover.
Credit where it's due. I believe the person who is holding up the sign goes by Dean TV.
Kenny Omega is super nerdy and geeky into video game stuff. And so he's worked that into his moveset, the V trigger, one of his special setup moves in the
game.
Well,
his big finisher, One Winged Angel, is a reference to Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's the name of the song that plays. So that's definitely a deep cut.
Yeah, too. He's into that stuff, obviously. And he liked a certain NES guy, but I gave him the digital version. Anyway, So the point is that it's funny to see that, and I think going forward, it might not necessarily become a meme in the gaming industry, but it's going to be looked at probably as one of the biggest failures/scams we've seen in the gaming realm.
Because
even like these people were saying, the Gizmodo actually came out.
I'm totally into calling it a scam at this point. Lots of people are not getting their money back when they were told that, you know, your refunds are.
People might be trying to do, by this point, maybe hopefully they're trying to do some sort of it's too late for credit cards. It depends on how many months for like PayPal disputes and things like that. Like if it's credit card, usually I think it's up to 6 months. But if you pre-order this 2 years ago, you might be out of luck.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, you might be out of luck. So. You know, it's just funny. Keep the signs coming. Keep the memes coming. Don't let them get away with anything. Don't let them get away with things, because they're going to try to run and hide.
They're already trying to hide.
They're trying to hide, not tweeting out, not talking about.
I really don't think this quiet period is ever going to actually come to an end. Yeah. I think that this is it.
They took the money and ran. And it's a shame, because it was our worst nightmare. And then it came to life.
And Tommy is definitely he's too narcissistic to not try to come back at some point, and no one should let him forget this.
No.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian.
Yes.
We have a scumbag.
Seller.
Of the
week.
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 Maybe more than a week. this was alerted us late last night.
Maybe of all time. I mean, it's bad.
This was tweeted a couple days ago. Then we got an info dump late last night.
So someone within the big box PC game collecting scene.
That's a group on Facebook too.
Right. Has been outed as having sold an enormous amount of counterfeit copies of old computer games, largely the Ultimas and Aklabeth, which was the precursor.
At this point, I think they're probably still trying to figure out the scale, but this guy was selling stuff for several years.
Right.
So it's like, this is early on trying to see what the hell do we have out here.
But it was first noticed as, who knows what else is there, but the first thing that people have noticed is the Ultima games, and just tons of them. Unfortunately, this guy who tweeted it, Dominus of Exalt, don't know his name. This used to be the centerpiece of my collection, rare and expensive old games. Now it turns out I've been scammed and sold forgeries by a well-known figure in the Ultima and retro games community, along with many others, and it shows basically all of his copies,
including something signed by Richard. Looks like Richard Garriott.
Yep.
So, like, that's where this is going to go. So the alleged counterfeiter scammer is Enrico Ricciardi. It's someone out of Italy, and they were also a moderator of the Big Box PC Game Collectors group. It sounds like, on Facebook. So, like, this was a person in power.
Right.
An influence in this community. I don't know. I collect big box PC stuff here and there. I've been doing it for a long time. I'm not part of any of these groups, so I don't know who...
Sure.
I knew who the players were, like, on Nintendo. I don't know who the players are in this category here.
So, basically, they're looking for all sorts of stuff. The level of... it's interesting when you just look at these, especially as a person like me, and I guess for a lot of the people here, who are collecting them, these are older games, the ones that he's been counterfeiting.
40-year-old games.
Yeah, they're the ones that come in, like, these are the ones that came in plastic Ziploc bags. There was a lot of, like, hand-done stuff, basically. Like the Aklabeths that, use two labels. There's one over an existing label. And... But once you start comparing these, the forgeries are pretty obvious.
Yes.
One of the things that, and I guess I should have thought about it, collectors don't really play this stuff. And if this stuff has got to be worth a lot of money at this point, you're probably not taking a magnetic disc out and playing it.
Well, computer game collectors don't.
Right.
A lot of them don't have, I don't have a nice DOS machine laying around.
Right. There are some people who will do that, but it's not everyone.
Not everyone has an Apple II that's functional.
Plus,
or an Atari computer.
Sure.
Exactly.
And you can emulate. So a lot of times people don't ever touch this stuff. Which brings me to my next point. Some of these counterfeits didn't even have game data written to them.
Sure.
They were blank. Not unreadable, just blank. They were talking in this info dump we got about how there are tapes that actually have, like, music on them instead of game data or nothing at all.
So the counterfeiter, the alleged counterfeiter, didn't even go that extra step
right.
in order to put the proper file on there. Probably realized they're never going to play it, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
that they didn't go that, which is probably the easiest step to just copy it over.
Right,
so you find a floppy, 5.5 on an old computer, and copy the data over.
There's ways to write from a PC to an Apple disk, literally just.
And the person never did that. The one in question, real quick. The one in question I've seen a lot, and I could almost always find a copy for sale, is the California Pacific Computer's Aklabeth.
Sure.
So we're talking the early Aklabeth. Top of the Orchard software. It has the green and white label on that. I can't tell you how many times, Ian, and I'm not saying I saw all counterfeits. I used to see that on whenever I was just search for old games, I would see that a decent amount of time.
Sure.
And I don't know how many of those they made, but they couldn't have made that many that 40 years later, they were almost regularly for sale.
I remember sitting at the Retro Roadshow at Portland the one year, and someone had that, and we
that
were
same one.
I'm pretty sure it was that.
Well, that was one sold in.
And we were talking about it, and they couldn't remember like what it would be worth. So I remember looking it up, and I remember saying, "Oh, there's a couple of them on here, and not as expensive as I would have thought. Expensive, but not as expensive as I would have thought.
Maybe like a few hundred dollars, couple hundred dollars, $100.
I think maximum like five. But I think it was like $250.
So this is what I'm going to say is this. One of the reasons. This goes back to what we talked about, will PC gaming ever be as big as console gaming? One of the reasons why this flew under the radar is one of the reasons is that there's a lot less PC game collectors where, like, it wouldn't be noticed as easily. When it's a smaller group, it's not, when it's a more trusting, smaller,
I was going to say, in a smaller group, that you feel like a club, and there's higher levels of trust.
Yes.
Retro gaming got so big and so out of hand that everyone got to the point where they were jaded or, you know, leery of, you know, most interactions and sales and things like that. But in a computer group like this, you know, it's a smaller hobby. These people have probably talked to each other for years and years. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I feel like it's got to be heartbreaking for some of these people to realize that, you know, a person that they looked up to, a person who was considered like a paragon, the word of the scene, you know, and ends up being the person who shoves it out or sells the shit. But that's the thing. These people, once they get into a position of trust, they know they're not going to be questioned.
Yes. And then I guess a lot of the times, probably, we're talking about PC stuff being hard to find versus games. I mean, the scales, we talked about how, you know, the PC stuff was an older crowd 40 years ago. The people that bought this were already adults. They probably threw that stuff out, retired. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't transferred to kids. It was worthless stuff,
right,
in the 80s and in even the 90s. The stuff from the 5.5 floppies, we tossed the ones out that we had, even like the ones that were, you know, copied games that were like,
you still find boxes of 5.25 floppies at it's 5.25, 3.5.
Yes.
Okay. You still find boxes of those at flea markets and shit, and they're worthless.
Yeah. A lot of them are worthless.
The amount of media, like physical media out there, is huge for these computers.
But in terms of like these games like this that didn't have a big print run,
sure,
they were tossed.
Yeah.
Looking at one of these things, there's a Japanese PC-88 Mystery House release. So Mystery House was the first, you know, graphical game that Sierra did. And so this was, gotta shut off my email there. So this was something that was sold to, let's see, which I just lost it because I'm trying to shut things up. Was this the one that was sold to Kevin?
Yes.
This was sold to Kevin. So he went through the contents and went through them and looked at the label of the floppy and could tell that it looked like some form of a scam. A scan.
About the dot background in the back. Yes. Like, you can see it even gets like a little magenta and cyan.
And the label was hand cut. Yeah, from a machine, because a machine is precise doing those versus hand cut. You're going to do it with a scissor, even like one of those little arm things that go down. It's not going to be 100% perpendicular and squared, stuff like that. Color differences, the feelies, like it looks like the instruction paper. You can tell the same thing. It was different color paper,
different color, different material,
dot pattern of cyan and magenta ink. So,
and one of the things that they mentioned in this that I just want to point out, they printed the wear onto the labels.
Oh, really? So they even examined the label to see if it was actually real wear.
It's printed. And one of the labels
they basically use a Photoshop file.
In one of the photos they show, there's an indent. There's like a almost like a nail mark, like on the label.
Printed on.
But when you examine it, it's not actually there. It's printed on from the scan.
So these collectors took it for granted that they were getting, they weren't even examining what they got.
Right.
They were not even playing it. They weren't even opening these up and examining them. They thought, oh, it's real. The box looks okay. It's real. Basically, going back to the California Pacific Computers Alphabet, this person, Kevin, I was talking about that, the dot pattern from the printing on there, talking about, you can see the dots clearly. You can see like the red around the green printing from like, we're talking like just like a laser printer, that did that. And then there was the cassette, the Dungeon Quest Temple of Apshai, which was a tape game. And this is the one where I saw this and I was like, I know it's hindsight 2020, but when you see the tape,
did I not see that one?
At the bottom, the tape, you can tell instantly something's up, because you can tell that the way it's cut and the way it's placed is not like, it's not even centered. Like when you saw stickers on cassettes from the 80s, you know, it was an oval around what do they call the two gear things in the left and right, the two wheels,
sprockets.
That's what, called?
That's what I'm gonna call
it. So this person made labels, printed them in Photoshop. They said even the font was different on the address. They couldn't match the font entirely. The silver looks even different, but that's fine. So when they put it on, you got to place it by hand. It's not even close to being centered on it.
And I've always said that when it comes to when it comes to counterfeits, like talking about NES ones,
it's hard to put those labels on.
The label is the first thing you got to look at, because unless it's being done by a machine, it's always going to be a little off center.
Yeah, because even you use like a tweezer and put that on, you got like to apply that evenly. That's tough.
I'm sure there's people out there, maybe like model decals, builders, who can do it. But exactly.
People probably put decals and stuff like, yeah, that's tough. So that was Kevin's stuff, and there's a few other documents. There's also, I guess, like a master document. And shout out to the community for not only, kicking this person from the group, but also putting together these documents within a couple of days. They put us together talking about, other ones that have been found from alleged counterfeits from Enrico Ricciardi here. From like this Ultima Pro Game version. I think you mentioned that one.
Yes.
The colors are
when we were looking at it this morning.
The colors are totally
fucking wrong. Yeah.
And I think that's what goes back to like expertise in circles. When you have a small group of people to rely upon, and there's less people that have this stuff to say, hey, like if I was buying a little Samson, Ian, I could find a collector to show me a little Samson.
Sure.
It'd be a lot tougher for me to find some of these games quickly for something I knew and trusted. Hey, Ian, show me your Ultima, the pro game version of it.
Right.
You have that? Oh, yeah, pal. I'll take a picture.
Sure.
Like, that's a little bit tougher.
1 second, buddy.
And that's what I mean. We're talking about games that are like, you're not going to find these easily to begin with. And there's less collectors. So the colors are totally off. They're like, I mean, the saturation levels, you want to call it the vibrance, they're just totally off. Like the blacks.
They're wrong.
Yeah, like for example, like the counterfeit one, like the background is like black, and on the real version, you can see more of the flame browns and reds coming through in the background. And again, it's hindsight, but now that people are looking at this, it's like totally opposite.
It's tough, and it really does go all the way back. It's a matter of trust. This guy earned these people's trust and fucked them. Took him for a ride.
This Lord British photo, you can definitely see the difference in the contrast and the white levels of him in the packaging.
It's clear. That's another thing people lose when you do scans. One of the back of the boxes shows, like when you're reading the address on the back, it's missing the comma because it's just something a scanner might not have picked up.
Sure, that's a good point. Or maybe they redid it and forgot to put it in.
Right.
With the font. But either way, it's not there. The photo quality is night and day in terms of it. It's not even close there. The manuals, different colors, clarity in the copy.
One crazy one that I want to point out is that there's the autograph in gold. They show these autographs.
Okay.
They scanned the autograph cover and put it on another box so it looked like it was autographed, but the autograph is in the exact same. They scanned both of them and overlaid them. It's the exact same. So one of them's not even a real autograph. It's printed on.
So it's both a forgery now, potentially.
Yes.
And you know, well, was it? It was originally an autograph, and now it's, or did he?
Yeah, it was an original autograph that was actually
new box with it.
And then they scanned it and printed a new box with it.
I mean,
so fucking insane.
So this person was prolific. We're talking, they're finding tons of examples of this. Again, this is all early Ultima and Akolabeth, which became, Ultima after that. They were talking late 70s, early 80s games here. I think at some point, someone must have asked, like, how does this one person have all this stuff in Italy? How do they have all the stuff that, you know, came out here, and they have all this, all these different variants of this stuff?
Well, too. I mean, I want to say, you know, I don't know what the demographics of that collector group are, but if they're all in the U.S. or mostly in the U.S. and you've got some guy in Italy, it's easy to just think, he's some eccentric collector who's got a lot of money.
Because I've heard
he's overseas.
Yeah, international collectors.
Yeah, there's lots of them. I mean, in France, there's a shitload of like really high profile PC Engine collectors. So it's probably not hard to just be like, okay, this is a guy who has money and he's spent the past 10 years building this collection.
This person also counterfeited, like, you know, they put like version stickers on, like circular stickers. Yeah. They did that. So they figured out they were hand cut. They weren't like perfect circles, or they were like rotated in different ways. They weren't, because they're put on by hand. So this person did a bang up job fooling people for years.
Yeah.
And no one just checked. It looks like they even weathered some of the boxes. That's what it looks like. They did some weathering on the boxes to make sure that, you know, it looked older. So this is what I'm going to say. Obviously, once, any sort of hobby becomes bigger, you're going to have potentially fakes and counterfeiters come into this. The problem with PC gaming is that it's so much easier to counterfeit floppy games. All you got to do is find, there's tons of 5.5 you can find from old games that are worthless, or even you can find, I have a box of unopened sealed 5.5s about the flea market. You can find that, Ian, and then it's just doing the labels at that point.
Right.
It's just so simple. You want to say, hey, Pat, oh yeah, you can try to do a little Samson. I don't think there's been a case of someone that's been fooled by a high-end cart game yet.
No, I don't think
because
so either.
Once you open up, you got to do the board too.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like really tough.
That's a lot easier to discover the issue.
But even the labels are usually are pretty clear. And even, even the plastics are, you know.
Different. I always talk about how you can, I can see a, especially with like N64, for example, I can see a counterfeit by its plastic before it's in my hand.
But even if you use like a real game, Ian, to try to do that, you're going to, the label and the board, that's where it's going to be tough. That's where it's going to be tough. To do that. And there hasn't been, from we know, something like this ever happened. Prototypes is something different. Prototypes, there's so much less knowledge when it comes to that stuff. They are only one-offs. People have been fooled. WADA's been fooled by them for games that were made up to be prototypes that were not really prototypes. They were just, you know, they found just boards and put the, you know, the game code on there, you know, and things like that. That's totally different. Commercial products, I have not heard a good story about a high-end skim besides Neo Geo games.
Because, Neo Geo games.
Because those, for some reason, are super easy to to produce, for whatever reason.
Right.
That's the only weird thing. They faked cassettes here as well. So yeah, it's really, I feel bad. This person, they're in another country. I don't know if they're going to be held accountable, for all this stuff. Real quick, before we end this, they did put out like a good sort of, anti-scammers guide.
Yes.
That unfortunately it's like, you wish they, people would have this and would be hearing this all the time. But it's almost like you have to have something bad to happen to wake you up.
You do. And, you know, we talk about how, you know, if a scene gets, you just mentioned, if a scene gets big, you know, it opens it up to scammers. Yeah. But a scene that stays too small, it is entirely based on trust. And especially like something like this, where the wealth of knowledge is not as great as video games, it's easy to find a scammer. They just have to. It's almost more disgusting because it really relies more on trust.
Yeah. Here's some of the advice, if it's too good to be true. Yeah. Look past your excitement for the object you've been wanting for so long. I think that's probably what a lot of this is. These are like games where, well, I'm not going to see another one of these even for years. I got to buy it now.
Yep.
You know, I got to buy it. Compare a copy you were thinking of getting to a known verified copy online. That's the first thing I did when the person approached me, Mike, with the gold NWC card. Ian.
Sure.
The first thing I did was like, are any of these images he sent me online? And once I verified these are all unique images,
I'm like, do a reverse image search
first. Do all that. Look for every known instance of it. Look on Nintendo Age. That's what I did. Wow, that was like, goddammit, 11 years ago.
Jeez.
I looked to make sure, okay, these are all unique images. So either this guy made his counterfeits, or this is real. That's like, we quickly figured out that it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, that's what I did at first. I didn't just say, oh, here's the money.
Right.
You know, I literally flew after the guy and examined the game in hand. You know, I literally did that. What else? Beware vague origin stories. That's good. Old man who had a software store. Allegations that it came from the original game developer. It was a gift. It's like, insist on PayPal or a method that gives you some kind of protection. Yes. Not just, wire me the money.
Right.
The old wire me the money thing. If you're going to spend a couple grand on something, you can afford to tell them that you'll be having it examined by an expert under a microscope. Yes.
Yes.
Buy a freaking little glass, a little like magnifying glass at the dollar store. Like, look, you can do that at least. And then red flags on here. If the seller insists on keeping the trade or sale secret.
Yes, absolutely.
That has never happened to me, but I guess it must have happened with this individual.
I think when you read through everything, there's like two or three examples of him telling them to keep the trade secret.
I would first ask why.
Why? Yeah.
And
why?
They would say, well, you know, I don't want to piss people off. It's like, that's weird. Remember, the job of the con is to sell you. They have a reason for everything, including explaining away concerns. Yes. Inconsistencies are explained away with a possible second print. Yes, this happens, but the older a title is, the chance that a new print would alter things more dramatically is, you know, it's going to be slimmer. We're talking about games that didn't get huge runs to begin with.
Exactly.
We're going to do second print runs of these, of a TRS-80 version of a game? No, that's not going to happen for the most part there. Forgers tend to have an obsession with pointing out forgeries and sharing details of what makes a copy authentic, usually using their own material as evidence. That is funny to me. I guess it probably happens in other fields as well.
Right. No, I'm sure it does.
That's pretty funny. Any other ones that you see that are interesting? It's just, you gotta be careful. You're spending four figures on games, maybe five figures. You gotta put in your due diligence on this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you got to fly out to get things, but I mean, you have to ask around on this stuff.
Yeah, you do. I just, yeah, I don't have a whole lot more to say. I think it's awful. I also don't know that I wouldn't have fallen victim to, I mean, think about it. And then it's just, yeah, it's a sad story.
Scammer tries to call into question how knowledgeable the other collectors are. So trying to say, oh, we don't know what they're talking about. This is real.
Right.
Oof, God. Yeah, it's a sad story. If this was like someone selling, you know, hard to find NES games or something, it would be like, huge news.
Massive.
Talk about the volume of collectors versus the PC gamers. So I hope there's recourse, but it sounds like a lot of these are, you know, this guy's out of the country, which obviously is helpful if you're going to do a scam. Yeah, for him. I just feel awful about it.
No, it sucks.
Enrico's a scumbag seller of the week. We got a Patreon, Ian.
We do. Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, you pay a little, you get what writings. I'll get one up soon. You get bonus bits.
Weekly bonus podcast. We talked about Stranger Things and the slasher Winnie the Pooh movie is coming out.
Movies week. In general. You get the full video podcast, and you get to be part of voting on these poll topics.
You do. And everyone's super happy with all the choices ever that they vote on.
Oh, yeah. They're always so happy.
In second place, defending retro games that most people dislike, 34%. And in first place, 66%. That's supermajority. That's the veto supermajority to overwrite the veto. If Video Game Years was remade, what would be done differently now? This is the 10th year anniversary of the Video Game Years.
Sure.
And it's one of the most common things that brought up to at least me, if not Ian, when we go to conventions. They say, I love Video Game Years. You know, it'd be great to see the 90s. 90s is not happening. I'll just say that before we get to the topic. But it's interesting that we talked about before the progression of like video game documentaries and even the past 3-4 years, how many more they've had versus 10 years ago when there really wasn't much of anything. There was like less than a handful at the time. And looking back, when we go back and watch, I don't know how often you watch. I don't know if you watch when I re-premiered
on my channel. I can't watch myself.
You can't watch yourself?
I cannot do it.
But in general, though, in terms of the tone and style of Video Game Years, it was VH1. I Love the 80s.
Yes, of course. That was it. No, there was no hiding it. That was the influence.
And that was sort of like the in vogue sort of documentary style for sort of like, not saying the video game stuff was silly, and there was more serious topics.
Yeah.
Like the video game crash and things like that. But like that was sort of like the structure that we said, this is acceptable at the time.
Yeah.
10 years later, that's not the acceptable structure for doing documentaries or edutainment. It just isn't.
It's certainly not the structure for anything that's going to be 45 minutes in length.
Sure.
People will look up similarly concise information on games, but they'll look it up specifically.
Sure. And also the style has become like, we want to deep dive into one topic for like 20 minutes or a half hour, or like Norm does Super Mario World, it's over an hour long.
Right.
Versus like if we did Super Mario World in the video games, you know, video game years, 91, it would have been, you know, 5-6 minutes. We could have talked about a lot about the game and a little bit of the history, but we're not doing what someone like Norm's doing. It doesn't fit the format. It's like get in, get out, basically, sort of thing. Super Mario Bros. We talked about probably for 5-6 minutes. So Super Mario World probably would have been the same thing.
Right.
So when you look at like what we have done differently, I think we would have, at least in my mind, Ian, we would have condensed down the subjects into a lot less.
We would have done less topics with more in depth on each topic.
With deeper dive. So say like, you know, we would have done, maybe we've been like eight topics a year, something like that. So at least each topic gets 5-6 minutes, 7 minutes each, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
That probably would have been, and we did start out with only that amount of topics earlier on when there's less to talk about.
There was less to talk about.
But once you hit the 80s, there's just, the arcade explosion, there's just too much to talk about.
Well, and there is, I would say 80% of what we covered was stuff that was worth covering. It's just, was it worth covering in that amount of time?
Yes.
And it's tough too, once you get into the nitty gritty and you get into like just this dump of potential topics. It's tough to make the cut. It's tough to decide where to make the cut. And I mean, the crazy thing is about all the amount of topics we did for some of those years, we had more. We started with more. Yeah, and basically, how that worked
and we forgot a very important game. The one important game I forgot about was Pirates that we did not talk about.
Oh, I love that
super important game. And out of all the games, like we hit all the ones we should have, we forgot about that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. It was like you and Rue would kind of get the topics together, and if there was a tiebreaker vote, I would.
You was a tiebreaker.
I was kind of the tiebreaker.
Yeah, because Rue and me had wildly different.
If you two were alternate, one was pro, one was negative. I had to
break the tie.
Yeah,
but I think looking back, what I would have done, Ian, was basically like almost like how the Museum of Play has the Hall of Fame. These games have to be like almost Hall of Fame worthy to be spoken about.
They do.
Or super important cases.
Yes.
You know, like the Casey Munchkin like lawsuit thing. Like, yes, that's important enough to get in because it's super important. Like, either super important to the industry or it's like a Hall of Fame game. Looking back, that's what I wanted. So I hate to say it, my favorite arcade game, Rolling Thunder, would not have made my new version of it. I hate to say it, Goonies 2 and the NES ain't making it, Ian. No. But we're talking about like these games have to tell. You cannot tell the history of video games basically without these subjects. That's the way I would phrase it.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you have to, like, without these, you lose something in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and I think I kind of go off of what you were saying. If we went back, it wouldn't be less topics. It would be drastically less topics because you'd have to really stick to what you said.
Yes.
And we would lose, and I don't mean it necessarily as a negative, but we would lose half of those topics.
Unless we did something like, we could have done like more generic topics about like how like the video game crash wasn't a specific game. So we did like, okay, we're going to talk about, Ian, all the adventure PC games.
Yeah.
From like these 3-4 years that came out, that were super important. All the Sierra ones, all the ones like Ultima, like if we just bundled some of those together.
Sure.
You know, it's a more like short stories. That's how I probably would see it.
Cover a topic and not a specific game.
Yes.
And you can rattle off names of games in there.
And reference them quickly and then
devote
move on.
15, 20 minutes to PC games and move on instead of bringing up every PC game, every adventure game every year that is important.
And I don't think we would be stuck to the year format then. It would just be like,
you couldn't really do the year format.
Like this was my dream that pandemic didn't help at all. So I realized I don't have the, the backing to do a project. I wanted to do for the NBA did basically 50 short stories about the history of the NBA, and some were like very like stuff you heard about. It's like Jordan's Nike deal. Well, then there was also like a story about this basketball camp that was super important that all these future Hall of Famers went to, Hall of Famers went to this camp like in the late 70s, early 80s. So like something you never heard about, something interesting, but you only spend like maybe like 3-4 minutes on it.
Right.
But then something like the Jordan Nike thing, that's like 15 minutes or like 12 minutes. So like you have these little like slices of life that you look at as you go through. You know, like for example, like going back to like Norm did like, he's done videos just like on all the Zapper games, for example.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily do something on all the Zapper games, but maybe like talk about like light guns being a new technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would work great.
And go through like the Sega Master System light gun, go through the Zapper, go through the Atari's light gun, and you just have this interesting slice of technology and maybe how that became, big light gun arcade games. And then talk about that to me is how I would structure video game years, like story in the future. It was attempted. Netflix came out with this a couple years ago, Ian, the High Score documentary.
Yes.
And we spoke about it, and I did not give it the highest of grades. I thought it was too small in scope in terms of who they spoke to. It was kind of the topics didn't line up all the time. They weren't married well to each other.
I agree.
In the episodes, it almost seemed like, well, Ian, we're going to talk to 6 people this episode. Let's try to make an episode out of it. Like, that's what it seemed. But they did do the one good segment, and this is one I thought about if I ever did new video game years. They talked to Jerry Lawson.
Yep, that was a great segment. That was probably the best part. It was easily the highlight of the show.
Well, they talked to his family. Jerry Lawson was basically the creator of the cartridge game. Created the cartridge game, and he worked on the Fairchild Channel F. And most people never heard of Jerry Lawson before.
Right.
I don't think he was the guy who did like a lot of interviews or like, and he died in 2011. So that, retro gaming, sort of blew up the past 10 years more. Like if he was still around, I'm sure people would have talked to him and got him interviews. So that was great. They talked to, I think it was the daughter and the grandson.
Yes.
And and talked about like just a little bit of his history at the company. They showed him playing a Fairchild, and no one talks about the Fairchild Channel Life at all.
No,
we brought up in Video Game Years in 77 just because it was so important for 76. That was the other thing I would do. So anyway, the point is, like, it was more of an intimate profile of someone. I think that would be probably more of my vision if the show was remade, something like that.
Yeah.
But another thing I would have definitely done, Ian, is I think what you smart?
I'm waiting to hear it, because when you start something off like that, it's going to be interesting.
You didn't give me credit. Okay. I would have done basically 25 minutes, everything before basically up to the Odyssey. So we're talking tennis for two. If it's even 20 minutes, the stupid tic-tac-toe game, the MIT computer stuff, Space War, everything.
We should have had precisely one episode on...
We should have one episode, everything up to 77. We probably could have done that.
Sure, yeah.
And we could have included the Fairchild. We could have done Odyssey. We could have done all the Pong clones. We did the Pong clones in 77, but we could have done that before.
We covered those.
But the point is, yes, we should have done, looking back, we should have done basically pre 77, because that's when it really took off. We could have covered.
Well, I would say what I was going to go with. So that's actually a little different than I agree that we could have done one short episode on that,
like a half hour.
But I feel like honestly, 77 to 80, we might have been able to truncate.
There was some filler.
Those early episodes are filler.
We shouldn't have done a Star Wars segment. We shouldn't have done Simon, because that's not a video game. Like that's
well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, we really stretched it. We could at least 77 and 78.
Yeah, once you get to 79. Galaxy Namco stuff. You take
but
off
77
more.
And 78 should have been
Space
one episode.
Space Invaders was 78.
I thought that was 77.
No, it wasn't 77 at all. It also Space Invaders came out in 78. Yes. So the point is that you would have done that.
I would have done that.
I think we could have done shorter episodes for that.
Could have done that too. We were pretty intent on the 45 minute.
Yes, because it was thinking about TV format still.
Yeah.
John comes from the TV world. That's probably what was part of it. Retroware TV is in the name. But definitely a pre-77 episode.
Yeah.
Odyssey, the first Odyssey, Pong clones, computer space, Space Worlds, or Pong, all that stuff. Tennis for two. That's enough. A half hour even, you get to that. We can do 5 minutes on the Odyssey. We weren't around for it 50 years ago, but we could have done 5 minutes on the Odyssey.
Sure.
And how important it was in Ralph Baer. We turned 100 in May. They did a posthumous rededication up in New Hampshire, his home state, for him. He has a little bronze thing of him sitting down.
Oh, that's cool.
In the park there.
I had no idea.
And it's the 50th anniversary, September of the Odyssey. So there you go. Pretty important year for video games. Pretty important year.
Yeah.
Pretty important year there. We'll see if something happens with that. Any other thoughts? Thanks for saying I had an interesting thought, Ian. You never think I'd say something interesting. That's fantastic.
Sure you do.
Sure I do.
Anyway, no, I have no other thoughts. That's about where I would end it.
Okay. This segment of the CU podcast is brought to you by Into the AM. They have premium, high-quality apparel, including nice graphic tees, basic tees, hoodies, and even boxer briefs.
Even boxers. That's covered.
I got the Lost Signal tee. Look at this. Vibrant colors. It's like an 80s sort of TV. You got some VHS tapes. I love it. It's retro. You got the Daisy Gang tee.
Daisy Gang. This little guy gets me.
Happy flower.
What I would like to point out is that the printing on these is really high quality.
Yes.
The colors, like I said, are vibrant. Doesn't look like it's ever going to really wash out. And it's like a bigger print than you usually get on a t-shirt, too.
They sent me the Jungle Cat shorts. These are going to be, next time I go to the zoo, Ian, these are what I'm wearing.
You're going to be the talk of the zoo.
Talk of the zoo with the Jungle Cat shorts. They have a great deal going on. They have a bundle deal for the graphic tees. They're 3 for $60 right now. So you can freshen up your style. You go to intotheam.com/CU podcast and you use code CU podcast and you'll get 10% off these very comfortable tees and all their gear on top of the bundle deal. You can do both if you want. Go look good and feel good with Into the AM. We got voicemails, Ian.
We sure do.
You go to
that's you.
You go to Anchor. You still won't learn it. Anchor.fm. What if I died, Ian, and you have to promote the voice messages? You'd be totally lost.
I just don't think we'd have a podcast anymore. That.
You could get someone to fill in into the share.
Not interested.
But just in case, write it down, Ian. Anchor.fm/the CU podcast.
Okay.
To leave a voicemail. At least you can remember that. There. I'd have to leave like Ian like a USB drive in case I died
with like a couple videos and
passwords, the instructions, and everything to get into the account. Maybe I'll still do that.
What to eliminate?
What to delete?
What to delete? Yeah,
delete private folder.
Delete.
That was one of the only good things from the Man Show back in the day, pre Joe Rogan. The first iteration was like it was a corporation that once you died they would go and like wipe out all your weird shit that you owned before your family came over your house and discovered it. That was actually a good funny sketch, like all your porno stash and weird toys and stuff. They would like get rid of all of it so your family never see that.
That's funny.
Consider that if you die, what's gonna happen? You just don't care. Anyway, so we got voice messages and here is the first one.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Ian and Pat. It's Jordan from Canada.
Hey, Jordan.
I'm just catching up on old episodes, and you're talking about going to see Mogwai and forgetting your earplugs. I got to stress to anyone listening, please, please wear earplugs.
Yes.
I'm an audio engineer. I'm trained. When you learn about hearing loss and all the stuff that comes along with it, including tinnitus or tinnitus, however you want to put it, it's so important. I don't care what people think.
No,
what earplugs look like.
Yeah, no, wear them
in my ears.
I'm very pro earplug. I didn't not wear them because I was like, I'm too cool. I just forgot them and it sucked.
No,
and I bought them from
warm in my late 20s. I don't care if girls look at me like I'm a fucking nerd.
Yeah,
it's like I gotta listen when I'm older in life. I'm sorry about that.
Shit, when we go and play pinball, Vonnie wears earplugs because the bar is too loud. Yeah,
wear them. So important. Anyway, love the show.
Thanks, Jordan. That's super important.
A solid PSA.
Hey guys, Tim here from Minnesota. Another message for y'all. I'm just kind of wondering what you guys think the next big collectible, big valuable thing is going to be with gaming.
Bing, bing.
Not necessarily just, Xbox 360 or Xbox One titles or PS4 titles, but maybe outside of that, what people are going to get into, what's coming in the future. I never really thought graded games were going to take off like they did.
They're not.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like, no one did because it wasn't a thing and it was a manufacturer.
And it's still not like it. It's more popular than it was, but it's still a pretty small group of people.
It's not a thing. Until I see people buying and selling them at conventions,
right?
That it's not a thing. And people say, "Oh, Pat, there's people something." There's almost no transactions happening.
They're there, but people aren't buying them.
Yes.
They're displaying them.
Yes.
Still in that stage where they've got to convince a bunch of other people to get into it. As far as what's next, I have no idea. I really don't. We used to have a topic that sat there for a while. That was what's next. What's the next big thing in retro game collecting? As we had that as like a back pocket topic. And we never did it. We deleted it because
it's going to be whatever. You'll say whatever was 20 years old. There you go.
Right.
Whatever's 20 years old, 25 years old, there you go.
That's what it is.
Hey, guys. Mike from Chicagoland.
Mike?
Ian, I want to know what makes for an ideal CU podcast intro. Now, we already know the guidelines for Q&A. 20 to 25 seconds. Get right to the point. No need to heap praise on you guys. As I'm catching up on my back episodes, Ian, you seem to be the one who guides the direction and the timing of the intros a little bit more. So I want to know, in your opinion, what makes for a killer CU podcast intro?
I don't know what makes for a killer CU podcast intro.
We never used to
intro.
Do intros.
Yeah.
We just do like a few minutes, hey, what's going on? And we go into topics.
Yeah. No, I really like the intros. Obviously the intros are best if we have multiple topics that we can cover in 2 to 3 minutes each. And I like a variety of them. I like to get something NFT in there.
It's more traditional
podcasting. Yeah. I like to
or
talk
show.
I like to, these days, especially I've been enjoying hearing what Pat has to say about TV shows that I will never watch. So I at least feel somewhat knowledgeable about them. I enjoy catching up on the movies. In terms of me being, I know because people have pointed it out, it's not boredom, but if we are going to get behind somewhere and have like an exceptionally long podcast, we get behind in the intro. Usually. So
we've done 55 minute intros before. Usually, so I like the 30 minute ones.
It's not me being, I'm not trying to be short with Pat, and it's not that I'm disinterested, but like there are times in an intro I'll be like, holy fuck, we've been on this for 10 minutes. We gotta go. And I'll just say, okay, moving on.
Usually that's why we stopped doing wrestling topics. They went on forever. That's one of the reasons why, plus people didn't care for the most part about them.
Something we don't really care about that we can talk about endlessly.
It's it's also, we don't need it since we're professionals. We're good at it. We don't do a warm up. We just go into the podcast.
Yeah, no, we just hit go.
That's why we have good chemistry. That's why we always do it. Like some podcasts, I'm not calling out certain podcasts, but like some would require like a warm up. Like, oh, let's get into talking, conversing, which is,
you know, fine. I get here 45 minutes early and we chat a little bit, but it's not a rehearsal.
It's show prep.
Yeah.
It's just like, what are the topics we're talking about? Let's narrow this down, sort of thing. Don't pull the curtain back, Ian.
He asked me to pull the curtain back.
Sergeant Zombie here. Hey, Pat, I was just wondering, after this whole Amico dumpster fire is completely over, if Hulu comes out with a series called Pat and Tommy, who do you guys want playing you, and who do you think would make a good Tommy?
Well, people say I look like Mark Ruffalo more and more, which is interesting. So
I'd clearly be Paul Dano.
Paul Dano.
I got so much of that when Batman came out.
I still have to see that.
I watched it.
3 hours? It should be trimmed a little bit, or you feel like it's...
You know what?
I heard it's more like a longer extended cut.
It was a long movie, but I enjoyed it very. I thought it was a good movie. You probably could have trimmed it in spaces, but it didn't hang at any part for me. Like it didn't feel slow.
Gotcha.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Mike from New Jersey. Love the show. This message is for Pat. So I caught you saying last episode that Cherry Hill is not part of New Jersey. Well, I just want to let you know, coming from Marlton, that you guys are just a bunch of fake New Yorkers.
Whoa! Okay?
Talk to you later.
Wow!
That's funny, Mike.
Wow!
That's funny, being that most people that work in New York live in North Jersey, and they commute a lot of them. It's also funny, Mike, that the New York Giants and the New York Jets play in New Jersey. They're Jersey teams, technically.
Yeah, they are. They're not New York teams. That's why the Bills are the best.
Let me tell you something, Mike.
You're
so Jersey that everyone that lives near you likes the Philadelphia Phillies and the Philadelphia Eagles. And you're telling me that's Jersey, but people in North Jersey are fake? Jersey, are you kidding me, Mike? Save it, Mike.
Save it, Mike.
If you turn on your TV and there's the Eagles on Sunday, you ain't Jersey.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Next one here. All in good fun, Mike.
Pat and Ian, what's going on? Met you guys both at PRGE 2016. And then, Pat, I saw you again for a second time in Syracuse that November. So I just wanted to ask quick. I know you guys have pushed back on the whole sealed WADA thing, VGA ordeal. But do you think there's a certain time frame where it's necessary, perhaps like Super Nintendo and before that, just because it's so rare and you don't really come across a lot of the stuff unless it's super common? Like,
I think there's a point, obviously, for authentication.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. But the way that the grading scene gets you is that they not only authenticate, they have to add the grade of it on top.
Right.
And that's where the trick is. There's lots of other industries and collectibles like antiques, you know, paintings, historical documents where they authenticate, but they're not going to throw a fucking grade on it. That only came into play with money collectibles and like baseball cards,
coins
and coins and stuff like that. Well, I'm talking about, you know, dollar bills and two.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah, sure.
So like, that's where I think people are like, well, what? Why can't there be an option just to authenticate? Like, why can't there be? Like, I think there'd be a market for that as well. It's because that's not the market anymore. It's all about, that's how you can tell it's people that really want it.
That was the market 10 years ago, and I did it for free at Luna Video Games. Like,
two locations. You got the Ian stamp? Like, it's face of Ian stamped on. It's approved.
All the time, people would come and be like, can you tell me if this is a real cartridge or not? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, let me get out my tools and we'll do it. But yeah, there's not a.
And he was just more qualified than someone at WADA in order to say that, like that it's real, because WADA screwed up with prototypes. We didn't talk about that at the one on topic where someone mentioned that there's one of computer games that could have been a forgery that from that guy in Italy went to WADA and got graded.
Oh yeah. They said that it's possible. Yeah,
it's possible
potential.
So I mean, like, that's what we're talking about. So it's like, when it comes to that, that's what makes me laugh as well. It's like, there's plenty of experts around too that could authenticate, but we don't have companies to put things in fucking acrylic plastic cases.
Right.
That's the only difference to do that there. But no, it is necessary to authenticate. Absolutely. Next one here.
Hi, Pat and Ian. I'm Em from Colorado, and I've been listening to the podcast for probably 8 years now, and I just finished up my first year in college. And I was wondering if you guys had any advice about, like, finding the time to play games when you're in college. I know, like, for me, like, trying to pursue a dual doctoral program, I have had great difficulty finding time to just play and enjoy games. And I was wondering if you guys had any advice for, like, time management or anything like that. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Okay, so real quick. So, you're pursuing a dual doctorate at 18 years old, it sounds like, if you're a freshman in college, which is incredible. Good for you, Ed.
Yeah.
But you started listening to us when you were 10?
I'm sorry. So sorry about that.
I'm trying to, Ian's language was a little bit more toned down nowadays. 8 years ago, a lot more pissing in people's mouths sort of things. So I'm picturing little 10-year-old M listening to Ian, and I apologize for that. But all right.
I wish I could help you, but you're going for a double doctorate.
M, this is my advice.
No experience there.
I'm not saying that's not a good idea, but the first 2 year of college, you might find stuff totally different. I totally did a 180 my sophomore year. But have fun in college, play some games. You know, it's hard to find time. It is. This is how I did it. I wasn't doing dual doctorate.
Right.
This is how I did it. It was usually classes, come home, you go to lunch, come home from lunch. That's when you usually play games for like a couple hours.
Yeah.
We did our nice, I'm going to mention Unreal every single podcast going forward. We played our eight person Unreal LAN, first year of LANs in 98 was a brilliant thing. Napster. Our own servers file sharing. So we did a couple hours of playing games, or not just Unreal, other stuff, and then you went to homework in the afternoon before dinner.
So I usually
say what we did.
In college, I did it differently. I would go home and get all of my work out of the way first, and then I would play games at night. The problem with that is you have to be... I don't sleep, so if I'm if I'm playing games, it's going to keep me awake longer. You've really got to set a timer on that, and I was never good about that.
Sure, I will do a few more here. We're making better time than I thought. I thought it would be the intro was probably shorter than we thought.
All right, speaking of
that, what was that? Are you trying to push me along?
Hey guys, Rick here from North Pole, Alaska. I've been collecting.
Wait, where are you from?
North Alaska.
No.
Hey guys, Rick here from North Pole, Alaska.
The North Pole.
Wow. North Pole, Alaska.
You live in the North Pole?
North Pole, Alaska is different.
Oh, that's not the North Pole?
There's not, from what I understand, there isn't really a...
I got excited because Santa was his neighbor.
It's in the water.
All right, sorry, Rick, what's going on?
I've been collecting all the Nintendo, Sega, and TurboGrafx minis that have been coming out. I even got the UK and Japan models. Oh. I know they won't be as recognized as the originals, but since they can hook up to a modern TV and basically you can load all your favorite games on them, I would think that they have a pretty good appeal. My question is what do you think about the future collectability of these? Are they just a fad, or do they hold any kind of real collectability? Thanks.
And these are what?
They're like the mini, like the NES mini, the TurboGrafx minis. Oh, will there be collectability for these?
I have a feeling if you fast forward 20 years, you're probably going to end up paying almost the same price or more. They're going to be wanted, but I don't think there's going to be like a collector's
I thought
scene.
You were going to say you'd be paying $500 price.
What I'm saying is I don't think the price is going to go down, and they could even go up.
I think it's one of those things that people want to actually play them
more
because it's HDMI. I don't see us having any newer HDMI tech. This is pretty much fine. We're not going to go past, there's 8K TVs, but relax. 4K is way more
relax.
Than enough.
Take it easy.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Great movie.
Great movie.
Scarface. But I think I'm going to say no. And this is why. I think, like you said, they might keep their value.
They're going to keep their value because people want them, but I don't think they're going to be collectible.
The exception will probably be the NES Classic because they only made 3 million or whatever.
Smaller print run on that.
But the Super Nintendo, you can find them easily. You couldn't give away the PlayStation 1, the Genesis 1.
Yeah.
People weren't fond of that.
The Genesis 1, the second Genesis 1 was way... The one that we got the review unit of was great. That was the one that everyone loved.
Oh, okay.
With the good game selection.
You're talking about
the At Games one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
that
was
awful.
Yeah. I read his question as these recent ones, including that, but you're right. There's a billion At Games ones out there.
Yes.
There's also I went to the swap meet, Ian. I saw the Atari Flashback Gold 8 HD one. I almost bought it. He wanted $40 for it. I was if I was ever going to play Atari games again, it was one that had Pitfall on it. So I had 120 games. I'm like, that would, because it has Activision stuff and Keystone Capers, that would
scratched my good itch. Atari stuff on it.
That was scratched my itch, but it did not have the it was not the deluxe version. The deluxe version had
the spinner.
The spinners.
Yeah.
If it had the spinners for $40, I would have bought it.
Yep, absolutely.
But without it, I did not. So I'm like, I think the other reason why I think they won't hold their value, Ian, Nintendo could always say, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but they could say in, 3 years, hey, it's the 40th anniversary of the NES. We're going to do a new version of the NES Classic. There's nothing from something doing. They were profitable. Like, they could have sold double or triple the amount of NES Classics. They could have probably done it at the time.
Yeah.
They did the Super Nintendo one. It was super profitable. If the emulation wasn't whack, there would have been an N64 one by now.
Yep.
There probably would have been. So that's the reason why there's always going to be other versions. Sega always needs a buck or two. They could always make more of them. There's always going to be an act games. You know, that's the reason why. The PlayStation 1, there's too many of them. No one gives a shit. It was an awful product.
No one wants it.
It was an awful product. Commodore 1 looked cute. I saw it at the swap.
Yeah, it looks great.
You can't press the keys. It has the Wiko joystick. It looked cute.
Looks okay.
I'm surprised. Do you have that? I'm surprised you don't have that.
No, I don't. If I found it,
I'm more of an Apple guy. But like,
yes, if I found it, I'd pick it up.
Yeah, okay. You want to check in with someone and see what's going on?
We do.
Hey, whoever had that sign on SmackDown last night saying Intellivision Amico scammed me, I hope you're happy, because these are some of the voicemails I got, okay?
Fuck the Intellivision piece of shit! Fuck you! Fuck the Terminator Rico! I put you in a camera clutch! Make you humble!
Okay, next one.
You know, I was watching SmackDown last night. It brought back a lot of memories. Especially when it comes to getting screwed and being told that I was the one who screwed myself. And when I saw that sign, I said, you know, this is what professional wrestling is all about.
And this next one really scared me, because I think I know who this is and pretty sure he's supposed to be dead.
How are you doing down there, Tommy boy? Oh, yeah, the pipes are calling now. Boy, it sure is nice when people get their comeuppance. The sleeper is on, but you just won't tap out. Why won't you tap out, Tommy boy?
What? I'm turning my phone off.
Oh, very good.
Excellent. Well, it's good to know Bret Hart got some joy out of seeing that sign. That's not
happy. And it was really good to hear from Roddy.
You know
beyond
what?
The grave.
We missed Roddy.
We did.
Roddy's been gone now for like several years already.
Yeah.
God, Roddy.
I miss you.
We miss you, Roddy. And of course, the Iron Sheik is always has to hear from the Sheik. Make you humble. Break your back, make you humble. All right. That was a fun one, Ian.
It was good. We had a time.
We had a time. You know, we're going to get you home in time as well. You're always, you know, thinking about that.
But yeah, got to work.
Respectable. This is work.
It is work. But you got to do more work.
Well,
more work.
So we're going to see you next week.
Yes, we will.
After this, at the week I had last week, I'm not sure. But hopefully it's a better week. Dubs, you going to watch it in the finals?
Yeah.
You are, because you haven't been watching the playoffs for the whole... No. This has been a great season to watch. I'm surprised. The one season you didn't watch is how awful the Lakers were and how great it was to see the Lakers get destroyed and give up 20-point leads like the Pistons.
Yeah.
Like, this is the one year you should have watched the Lakers crumble, because it was glorious. To see
that Lakers Pistons game,
especially after LeBron in the beginning of the season was, oh, I hope you keep that same energy later in the season.
Oh, yeah.
And he deleted that tweet, but everyone got the screenshot of that. It's like, no, you did a lot worse than we thought you were going to do with your old man team there. Just glorious. Let's go, Dubs. Let's go, Steph. Warriors in seven. We'll see you next week.
Bye.